Come on around, y'all. Let's get in the backyard and see what we can do to keep things alive on this Arizona Saturday morning. You are tuned in to Rosie on the House. It's 8 o'clock, the Outdoor Living Hour. And we have Mr. John J. Harper of Harper's Nursery and Hickman's Farm Fresh in to answer your questions at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Jennifer will take your call. Find out what zip code and question you have. You can text questions to 411-923 or email pictures if you need help with plant or insect identification to info@rosieonthehouse.com. Good morning, Mr. Harper. Can I?
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm switching headphones.
Go ahead. Does that sound better?
A lot better.
All right. Time for a little studio maintenance.
Yeah, those were terrible.
Poor Dr. Dean. He had those
was
on.
He listening? Was he doing the show with those? Wow.
It explains now why he looked at me three times and touched his headset.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now I get it.
Yeah. Can't hear a thing.
So we've got 4th of July, and you've got some red, white, and blue flowers out here on display.
We do. There's a fair amount of things if you start putting your thinking cap on it that will hold up in the summer 4th of July type heat that we have here if you want to do a patriotic planter. For instance, in one of our most common summer annuals, vinca or periwinkles, there's a number of different choices in shades of reds, whites. Blue is the hard one. There really aren't very many. I shouldn't say there isn't. There's a few, but there are not very many really truly blue flowers. Most of what we would use as a blue would be more towards the purplish tint. So if you can live with it being, kind of more purple than blue.
Can you spray paint them?
Oh, you could always do that. They're blue enough.
Okay.
How's that?
People would
get the idea. So vinca have all three colors just in one type of summer annual. Pentas you could get pretty close. Certainly red and white in those. Angelonias, you could get the, there's a true dark red, but you could get close enough with Angelonia. Then you could combine like red and white vinca with Katie Ruellia, which is purple, and do kind of a combo thing there. So there's a number of ways to go if you want to get those colors, especially if you start mixing varieties and types of plants. That'd be an interesting thing to ask callers to come in. What would you do in red, white, or blue as a planter for the summer? But everybody has their own favorite types of things. But there's some to begin with right there.
Red, white, and blue. That'll be the theme of today's broadcast throughout. But I think the majority of today seems also going to be just keeping things alive.
Well, we've just had we have had a steady stream of phone calls, people coming into the nurseries. I've talked to a number of my colleagues at different nurseries. It's the same all over with people just bringing in leaves. What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? My plants are, what's wrong? What's wrong? And and it has been, I would guess probably, 96 when we broke the record, 122? In the mid-90s when we did that.
Yeah, I think you're
right. And along with the 122, I think leading up to that, we were 118, 120, 122, then 116 or 17. We had a week or so of those horrendous-type temperatures. Same way this year. We didn't break the record, but we had.
It's really funny how the next week when it's only 108, you're like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Yeah, well, it's still, though, 111 today, I think. So we've had two solid weeks of basically 110 plus. And we've talked many times, when it hits 110, your watering schedule probably isn't sufficient. Even if you're watering correctly, in most cases, it might not be enough, especially if you have more subtropical type landscapes, citrus, Cape honeysuckle, those types of plants. If you've got Texas sage and bougainvilleas and Mexican bird of paradise and, you know, some of the more desert or hot weather adapted plants, and they're well established, you're probably okay. But what we're seeing people bring in are primarily grapefruit, ficus, ash, cape honeysuckle. So we're seeing those, not marginal plants, but plants that really prefer under 110 degrees and a fair amount of water. So if you were not watering quite frequently enough or quite deep enough or just not watering enough, maybe you were right on the cusp when it got over 110 and we had, I don't know how many days, but we had then 118, a couple 3 days in a row of 118-ish. You know, it did a lot of damage. Now, even some of those plants that are not as well adapted, things like ficus and some of those, depending on where they were planted and how they were planted, even if you were watering them enough, they might have sunburned. They just couldn't keep up with the amount of transpiration that those foliage, that leaf was losing, the hot nighttime temperatures when the lows were 88, 89, 90 as the low. Yeah, they just can't hack it. That being said, a lot of that damage is superficial. It's the very top of the tree, maybe the south or west sides of the tree. Those leaves are going to just naturally go ahead and desiccate and die and fall off and be replaced by new foliage if you water properly, fertilize properly. You know, it won't be, you know, life-threatening in most cases, especially on established things. Brand new little plants, they might have gotten fried, you know, if you were, you know, if you landscaped and left to go on vacation, even if you had an automatic irrigation system going, you might have some surprises when you get back.
Now, I shouldn't say this because they might be listening. Our neighbor, for their chickens, mm-hmm. goes out in the afternoon, like at 3 o'clock. And hoses down a grapefruit tree.
Okay.
When it's well over 108. And the thought is, you know, they're going to just try and make it nice and cooler underneath the
sure.
chickens.
Sure.
Don't you run a huge risk of burning your tree with that?
You know, probably if you put enough water on it, it wouldn't be a problem. Sometimes if you just get like a sprinkler running for the grass and a little bit of water gets on those leaves, it could. But no, probably not. You know, if they're probably getting it pretty darn wet to try and do what they're doing. And I don't think it'd be a big problem, really, frankly. The biggest thing is doing it in the heat of the day and spraying a lot of water and doing that. You know, you're losing a lot of water to transpiration. It's not the wisest thing. If you're trying to water the plant, I realize that's not what they're doing. They're trying to create basically a misting system or a cooling mm-hmm. apparatus. A little mini evap cooler underneath that tree for those birds. And it'd probably be more efficient if they went and got a portable swamp cooler and just kind of blew it up under that tree, you know, during the middle part of the day. But, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, there's all kinds of creative stuff. You start seeing, like you said, after that 110, all bets are off and we'll try anything.
Well, and the other thing we want to caution people not to do, because it's the first thing people say they want to do, is start trimming those dead. And even if the ends of those branches do die back a little bit, do not trim anything off. Just like when we freeze and have frost damage in the late winter, leave all that tissue on there until new growth starts to come out, until temperatures cool. Then if you need to go take off some dead wood or do some of that, that's fine. Most of this damage is strictly superficial. It's just the leaves. It's not the branch. And the leaf is going to fall off and be replaced by a new branch. Now, that's going to make fertilizing late summer, early fall really critical for these plants to be able to recover and stay in a recovery mode, putting on new growth. Because a lot of them are going to need to really put on a lot of new growth before it gets cold next winter. So make sure you're getting out there and getting some fertilizer on here in another month or so. Even as soon as the monsoons and the humidity kicks in, you know, I'd get some fertilizer on those damaged plants.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. We start this Saturday's broadcast with Mr. George in Phoenix. Wants to talk about a certain type of tree. Welcome to the program, sir.
Yeah, the Arizona walnut, will they grow down in the valley?
Our native walnut that you see in southeastern Arizona, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, you see about Prescott.
Yeah, you know, see, those walnuts are grown at about 5,000 feet, whether they're around Prescott, down around Patagonia, Sonoyta, Wilcox area, those parts of the state. Pretty marginal here, although you see a few, and there are some walnuts over the years that have been planted here. With proper irrigation, you could probably get by with growing some. You know, I certainly wouldn't do it this time of year. That's a tree I would wait till fall or early winter to plant.
We appreciate the call. And if he was looking for that type of tree, that size, that shade, pecans would do a lot better at that lower elevation.
Correct. Pecans, pistachios do reasonably well here. Even almonds do reasonably well here. That's not to say there aren't people that have grown walnuts, and over the years we've sold some walnuts here, but it's just a little bit probably on the marginal side.
And probably people that are really successful, they'll spend a lot of time nurturing and fertilizing.
Well,
and
or you've got flood irrigation, those types of situations where you can squeeze it in between a couple of other trees, that type of thing. So it's got to be the right situation.